but spoiler.
Please be advised. Spoiler alert! Spoiler alert!
Spoiler alert!
Spoiler alert!
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Hunger Games Spoiler Ep. Spoiler Ep number 39.
Mockingjay Part 2.
Part 2.
It's a lot of numbers in this title.
It's a lot of business. Of course, this is a spoiler ep, so we will be going into key details, key elements, including the ending of this movie.
Although Laura let a few things fly during the regular episode.
Wow, it's too hard to edit around. Sorry.
Yeah, she was all over the place. We would have had to take 30 minutes out of the episode.
So, okay. To the end, she saves the world, beats the capital, and then goes with PETA, and they have a couple of babies.
Yes.
The joke that I made, I saw this movie at the Chinese theater, the big fancy IMAX, which was fun, on opening night, the 20th of November. And when she's like, the war's over and she's back in her hometown and Pete is sleeping down the hall. He's finally starting to come out of his, coma of whatever.
Deprogramming or whatever it was.
Yeah, pro-capital deprogramming. He walks down the hallway and I said, she walks down the hallway and I go, looks like someone's going to go get a pita sandwich, which made my girlfriend laugh so hard she was hitting me. And then she has the baby. She has a baby, and they're playing in the field. And the baby looked Asian. Didn't the baby look Asian to you when she's holding the baby in the field? I was like, "That's an Asian baby."
No, I didn't notice that. It might have been the IMAX screen.
Maybe made the baby look Asian. Makes sense. IMAX Asian technology.
Yeah, it's anything high tech.
All right, it's going to make everyone look Asian.
Yeah.
All right. I guess that's what happened.
That's like Trumbo. You know.
I think that ending was, why she's with PETA, I don't know.
I honestly, and this is coming from someone who read the books, it wasn't a surprise. I knew, like I said, it followed the books very closely. I didn't care who she was going to end up with because I felt it was really not essential to the story. Because, and I always said this with the difference between the Hunger Games and the Twilight nonsense is that Twilight, you have this ridiculous love triangle, and then you build a ridiculous fantasy around it. The difference with the Hunger Games is you actually have a really solid science fiction foundation, and you dump a dopey love triangle on top of it. So you could actually separate the dopey love triangle and have, I think, a really solid science fiction story. So I really thought, and it was funny because I remember reading the books going, oh, is there another scene about this? You know, she can't decide. And then every time it came up in the movie, like, oh, she can't decide and who she's going to end up with. I was like, oh, you just felt the movie come to a grinding halt.
Yeah. I mean, Laura made fun. It was very hilarious how she was like, well, this is a girl movie.
Yeah, so you don't understand. It's necessary.
Which is hilarious. I say this, like, if the tables would have been turned, like it was a guy trying to decide between two women, I would have been like, shut up and save the world. I don't care.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Just get after it. So, I mean, I did like, so we've talked about that in the regular episode. So let's talk about I really liked how they showed that she had become she was just a propaganda machine. Showing them shooting, like the propaganda team with their cameras show up and they're like, no, you're not at the front line. You're back here and we're going to stage these fights and all that stuff.
To make sure, you know, you're going to be in some danger, but, you know, you're an asset that we need. We can't put you in too much danger.
Yeah. And I think, so that was interesting. And then the Julianne Moore plot point of, oh, she actually knows they're going to win and wants to have power when it's over, so she's okay if Katniss gets killed. I was like, that was really cool and intriguing to me.
Very interesting. And it's also played up to in the book where what I loved about it too is Katniss never feels safe ever. She's with the Resistance, they're going after the Capitol, and they realize, oh, well, no, now the team I'm on I have to worry about too.
which is good because after Mockingjay Part 1, it's like, oh, okay. They're going to, you know she's going to bring the capital down. You know she's going to defeat Sutherland. So what is intriguing about the second part? Well, that part, that's really yes. intriguing. And then the politics after, you know, and how Julianne Moore is just like, well, just for right now, we won't have elections. And just right. like, uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And
we're going to have one more Hunger Games.
Yeah, the Ali who plays Boggs, he's a really solid actor. He's in House of Cards. And it was cool that he was like, I'm here to protect you. And then gives her that tip of information of how Julianne Moore wouldn't want, you know, Katniss around for right. an election. The end arrow scene, I was like, the minute they showed it, I was like, oh, she's going to shoot Julianne Moore in the chest.
Oh, so you saw it coming.
It was 1,000 miles away because mm-hmm. I know how arrows work. I was like, all she has to do is just raise it up like an inch or two and it's right. going to go. They lined them up. The first shot, I went, oh, she's going to shoot Julianne Moore. It's obvious.
It was more surprising in the book because you didn't see them lined up perfectly like that.
Right, right.
You really didn't expect it. And it was also a little more chilling, like... they made it a point of where Snow just kind of laughs after Julianne Moore, like that the character, dies from the arrow. And they also make it a point that, and this was interesting in the story, and they followed it in the movie, you don't know what happened to President Snow. Like, you never see exactly someone kill him. And in the book, it was always vague. Obviously, he was killed by everyone. But the point was that it didn't matter what happened to him. One dictator is replaced by another dictator. That's the point that whole sequence was trying to make. And right. I thought it made it very effectively. And it was really interesting, I thought, that what is now President Snow is the one person that's not lying to her.
Right.
You know, her greatest, deadliest enemy. And that's what I was saying on the regular episode. I found that to be the most interesting. It's always interesting when... you know, with Batman and the Joker, like the, right. the villain and the hero actually have these exchanges where insight is actually gained.
Yeah, well, the villain, a truly good villain knows the protagonist very well.
Right.
And reveals, you know, and says to them about, oh, you know, there's always that, like, cut the crap. You're just like me.
Right.
You know, and it's always sort of cliche. I'm not like you. But, you know, it's those scenes when they get into the Capitol. Well, first, when you start to see slowly the president's inner circle start to, first we get to see it more that we haven't seen it as much because he's always sort of just been on the TV a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Which was interesting. That's sort of the purpose of him, is just sort of being this figure that lords over you visually mm-hmm. as well as every other.
And I love the mandatory viewing. Like, if the screen comes on, you have to watch
mandatory
it.
Mandatory viewing, no matter where they were, you know, right. in these dilapidated buildings and everything.
The screen still worked.
Screen still worked to get his message across. And then we started to see what was behind it, and it started to crumble.
Mm-hmm.
And his whole evil strategy, I'm going to get everybody coming to the gates and I'm going to kill these people because I don't give a shit about them. Like, that's the thing that is so funny. And Laura was talking in the regular episode too with regards to Trumbo and this, but like...
Now, did you expect the reveal, well, to back up that point a little bit, did you expect the reveal that was actually the rebels that killed all those people?
Oh, right. That the mm-hmm. the... But he sort of staged it, is how I saw it. Mm-mm. No.
No, he was getting them there. I think it's a little vague, too, like in the movie where maybe he was going to use them for a human shield, but he didn't bomb them. The rebels actually bombed them.
Oh.
And he said it, because he said it was, I didn't think she had it in her. That was a brilliant piece of strategy, because I had no reason to bomb my own people and children right in front of my house. But the fact that they were bombed and killed made the rest of my supporters abandon me.
Right.
So, but it was a brutal thing, and it killed Katniss's sister. And it was, what I didn't like was how it was, again, filmmakers sometimes feel like they have to foreshadow and like set this up so spoon-feedily. Yeah. As like, 'cause there was that beginning part when they were talking about bombs and said, well, you know, you could drop bombs then, but then as people rush in to help, then you drop the second bomb to maximize the casualties. And that's exactly what happened
right.
later. And it was the rebels talking about that type of bomb, and then there was the rebels that set it off. In fact, at the end when what is his name? Curtis at the end, Gale.
Right.
I'm just going to make up different names for him. It was like, because he was more into the armaments and the fighting and all that stuff, obviously more than PETA was.
Right.
But because when Katniss asked, was that your bomb? And he gives a very honest response. I feel like, I don't know. Like, it really could have been, but it's clear it was, because you see how ruthless Julianne Moore's character was, that right. she wasn't above it. So it was an interesting twist, and it was one of those things I did not see coming, I will say, from the book. And it was also a great way to show that, yeah, you're on the side of the angels, the rebels. And like, no, they're just as brutal and ruthless as the people that you're fighting.
Yeah, which was why the arrow scene through Julianne Moore's heart was like, oh, this is how, I mean, obviously, having never read the books, but I know Katniss is going to save the day. Like, she's going to make all right with the world. And the way she does that is by going, you want to replace one dictator with another? Nope.
Yeah.
And then the,
I'll tell you, how weird was it to see Philip Seymour Hoffman?
That was weird.
Cause you know, he passed away a while ago, but you know, they had shot these movies back to back. And, you know, when an actor dies, their movies slowly trickle out. And this one, I had forgotten that he was still in this movie.
Yeah. When he first came on screen, I was like, oh man.
Yeah. I feel, you know, you just get that pang of like, what a waste.
But it was, having her like, oh, I'm going to kill Coin. And then everyone just sort of basically rips President Snow to shreds.
Mm-hmm.
And then I loved the scene before that where they're sitting around the table once the Capitol has fallen with Julianne Moore, and they're voting on what to do, and she looks at Woody Harrelson and how they sort of worked, like he gets her and they're free. And then I love the little thing they showed the TV of that one woman who was like the rebel general. She became president. I thought that was cool because it was an election and that woman seemed to actually have some honor and some ethics
right.
to her, you know, versus everyone else is just sort of corrupt going for power, which is a great thing. Like, and honestly, it's happened throughout history. The rebel army is tired of being oppressed and then they finally get some power. No, okay, they're going to be corrupt and,
you know, absolute power corrupts.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So that I really found interesting, and I thought it did wrap up the franchise well.
Yes, it's a solid science fiction story and setting and characters. It really is. It's just, you know, just the dopey love triangle. It's so. I'll tell you, I don't think, did it have to be a triangle? Couldn't it have been like, you know, two lovers who couldn't be together? I would have believed that more
right.
than a girl who can't decide in the middle of trying to save her life.
That'd be more intriguing, I think, is that she's just loves one of these guys and then is pulled apart to fight the Hunger Games. And every time you think they're going to get together,
right.
they can't. And then there's this war and they're fighting a war together. And like, how do they have this, you know, how could you have a relationship when you're both in some fucking rebellion.
People are trying to kill you all the time.
Yeah, all the time. And you blow everything up. So,
and I, the science fiction elements, too, were really interesting as far as, like, those pods. Like, they would make like, the invasion almost like a game. Like, you never saw a giant invasion. You never saw, like, scores of troops invading a city being fought back by an army. You never saw that, which was interesting. Like, you only saw, well, first of all, it's too expensive, A.
Right.
Second of all, they wanted to show it more like a deadly game. Like, you have all these pods and traps, and as the soldiers advanced, they had to deal with all these things. And they also were televised.
And I thought it also seemed to me like they maybe just didn't have the numbers. Like, they're the one percenters.
Right.
So they don't have droves and droves of people to fight the 99%. They have robots to go out and kill everybody.
And they have, you know, a police force, but how many
do they really have? And that's the thing. If you know you're outnumbered, you can't let somebody know that.
Right.
But when they're in the Capitol, those crazy demon things that chase them, that was
terrifying.
Was terrifying.
Yeah. Yeah. The mutts. They're
the
like,
mutts. Uh-huh. Oh, and great. great fight scenes and great. I mean, just that was I was on the edge of my seat during that, which I really liked. And I also like Jenna Malone's character because she was sort of like it was a cool showing the like the rebellion isn't. It's not all, you know, rainbows and waving the flag. Like she was just like over it and it's all bullshit. And it was, she's very cynical and, oh, you're the Mockingjay, you know, like you're the, you're the big hero. And I, you know, and which I found really interesting. And what they're trying to say of, you know, if you look at our society right now, what, and how, people can be swayed and controlled pretty easily and you get people to turn against themselves, you know, like trample each other on Black Friday or whatever in some Walmart. I mean, it's like it and prey on people's fears and don't rise up because we'll crush you and don't fight the system. And then people seeing, oh, you're going to fight the system. Well, I'm going to use that for my advantage and exploit the quote unquote rebellion just for my own personal gain. It's pretty, I could see on the surface be like, oh, these are just silly little kid sci-fi movies. And they're pretty,
there's some depth to them.
Yeah, there is some depth.
Yeah. As far as like, but you know, it's still a popcorn movie.
It's a popcorn movie. Yeah. Without a doubt. It's a popcorn movie,
but it's definitely a solid popcorn movie.
Well, the other thing too, that it was good. And it was something that Laura touched on in the regular episode of Jennifer Lawrence's career.
Has taken off during the span of this franchise.
And Jennifer, it's like Jennifer Lawrence needs to put this character to bed.
Yeah.
Because
she has
for sure. And that's why she's coming, you know, this movie Joy is coming out and all this stuff like that. But that, I was glad. I was like, okay, she's no one has to fight. She's settling down. She's going to become a mom.
I wonder how many more X-Men movies she's going to be doing.
I don't know. Well, she's in those with her boyfriend or maybe her husband now. But I think it's like this was cool. It was a cool franchise. It was great for Jennifer Lawrence. And now it's time to move on to something else. You know?
Yeah, yeah. It's not something that's going to go on forever. It's kind of like Harry Potter, where it's like, you're done. However, Harry Potter figured out a way to do a prequel. So we're right. Getting a prequel soon. I don't see how you could do anything more with this franchise, even tell a side story, a prequel. I don't know where you would go with this. So I think this is something that you should be thankful that you had and not try to make anything else here. Just let it go.
Mm-hmm. The other thing too is
or let George Miller reboot it with Cars.
No, I think it's a capital car race.
Yeah. Hunger Games, but everyone's in right. Cars.
Fight mutts.
Yeah.
The mutts of bread with humans, right. And there's some sort
and
of...
And cars.
Yeah. There's a weird car mutt.
Human mutt car hybrid. People with wheels.
I'm into that. Get a plug-in human car mutt hybrid that gets better mileage. Well, the other thing I do want to talk about is... Part of, and I know they were trying to stay true to the book, but like the thing that always took me out of this a little bit was the ridiculousness of the costumes of like Stanley Tucci and Elizabeth Banks. Now I know Elizabeth Banks has been since the last one was brought over to the rebellion. And Stanley Tucci was always in these ridiculous outfits. Now I know what they're trying to say, like, look, they're just so wealthy. While people are wearing, you know, gray outfits out in the district.
All the color is in the capital. And that's one of the problems is the legacy of the first film, where it went so over the top, like these colorful, ridiculous, cartoonish outfits. To even tone them down a little bit was still too much.
Right.
But the point was that, like you're saying, everything in these other districts is gray. Nobody has anything, but in the capital is where all of the opulence and money and basically decadence is. People right. have no idea what to do with their money or time, and this is, you know, what entertains them.
Yeah, and I thought the director was Francis Lawrence, who did I Am Legend, and of course he did Hunger Games: Catching Fire, and he did this Mockingjay 1 and 2, and then he also did Constantine.
Oh dear Lord!
Come on, Constantine. So I'm glad that that was the thing. Like I've never seen a franchise, at least for me personally, to where there was so many cool moments and then other moments that I was just like, oh, that's kind of weird. Like it was very much, and I think you're right, they were so beholden to that first one. But then every time something would sort of take me out of it a little bit, I would get brought back in again.
Right. For everything it did wrong, it did something right.
It did something
bring
right.
It back.
And like, and in the last one, in the Mockingjay Part 1, the relationship between Philip Seymour Hoffman and Julianne Moore, I thought was very intriguing because she was, which going back to this, making her be sort of the villain at the end of this was even more interesting to me because in Mockingjay Part 1, she's just the pragmatic soldier.
Right.
You know, he's the like marketing politician guy. And she's like, well, this is what's going down. This needs to happen. And I see this, I'll use her if it's strategically beneficial, but if she gets in the way of an operation, forget it.
Right.
And how he sort of was the puppet master a little bit, which was interesting, and how he sort of had to, he's not a soldier. He's not a military guy. He's more of a politician that needs to sort of navigate that. And then we saw that navigation in this a little more, you know, a little less. Like we saw actually the result of all of his sort of positioning in part one. We
right.
saw the result of that here in part two, which I thought was cool. So that Julianne Moore wanting to seize power, that's an interesting thing. Like, how would you play that as an actor? Would you go into it as, this is my end game, I've been planning to do this all the time? Or do you see an opportunity and get a little drunk with power?
Yeah. What was the evolution?
Yeah. Because it almost seems like,
did you start from a pure place or did you always have this in the back
right,
of your head?
Right. Were you like a really good soldier like MacArthur? And then just started to believe your own hype a little bit too much and start to think that, you know, who was it? I think it was Truman that referred to him as his highness, referred to MacArthur as his highness, because he kind of started after World War II was like, oh, him and Patton and those guys were all considered heroes, and Eisenhower. And he was like, well, I can do whatever the hell I want, and I'm going to just disobey and just do whatever. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if that was the strategy behind, either the writing of Julianne Moore and also, her choices as an actress. But what's going on? We got an ad
read. We got an ad read, my friend.
Oh, well, now.
This is another longtime sponsor and also is going to go into next year as well. This is Casper Mattresses. And we're a big fan of Casper, and you're still sleeping on yours.
Love it. Love this mattress. I was telling a friend, Walker Ewell, who does all the production for the podcast festival, is moving, and he's like, oh, I need a new mattress. And I was like, dude, I've been sleeping on this thing for months now.
You get it in a box.
Get it in a box. I love it. And I was literally telling him everything. I was like, you can use it for 100 days. If you don't like it, ship it back for free.
It's made in America.
It's made in America. It's memory foam. And
he's going to want a king.
Go king.
King, $950.
$950. Isn't there a coupon code?
Oh, there's a coupon code.
Look at that.
Comedy Film Nerds, $50 off.
Yeah, coupon code Comedy Film Nerds. Go to casper.com/comedyfilmnerds and use promo code Comedy Film Nerds and you get $50 off. So you get a king mattress for now $900.
Yeah.
Delivered
shipped
right to
your door. And what? You get, what would you say, 100 days?
Yeah, you get 100 days to try it out. At the 90th day, if you're like, this mattress doesn't work,
send it back. Yeah.
They'll come grab it.
Yeah. You're not hurting anyone.
Yeah, anybody, man. Just
now, I have a question for you. Since you're sleeping on it, how long did it take you to figure out that you wanted to keep it? Like, what was your personal trial period?
It took me about a week or so.
About a week.
They
okay.
said in the box that it takes up to about 2 weeks to sort of, if you're not used to sleeping on memory foam, which I've slept on a handful of memory foam mattresses. Some hotels have them, but not many.
Right.
So, you know, it took me about a week or two, and then I started to go like, wow. And now after like a month or then it started to really get broken in.
Right.
Now the mattress is great.
Yeah, because the mattress also releases endorphins to make you love it after 2 weeks, right?
Yes, sure, Chris. It has weird freak technology.
Yeah. I mean, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah, it's good. It's good stuff. It releases endorphins. 100-day guarantee and releases endorphins. Just use coupon code Comedy Film Nerds.
It's made in the capital. It's science fiction-y. It releases a non-toxic gas.
Yeah.
That stimulates endorphins and pleasure centers in your brain.
Right. And both sides are comfortable for different reasons. And you can't choose which side of the mattress. One side's sort of ruggedly handsome and the other side is, you know, softer. And maybe if you want to have a family with that side.
You just don't know.
You just don't know. No. You don't know what to do.
So I think the bottom line here is there's literally no risk, and it's $50 off. Go to Casper.com, Comedy Film Nerds, and use your coupon code Comedy Film Nerds. You know, it's an unconventional gift, giving a mattress for Christmas, but why not? There's no rules.
Why not? You do whatever you want. I'm telling you, if you're out there looking for, if you need a mattress, this is a great way to go. And you don't got to deal with some, you know, just the post office ships it or whoever they use.
Yeah, you don't have to deal with the creepy mattress store people.
Yeah, coming in. Well, take the old one. Yeah. I don't want to know what you're going to do.
You're killing me, Larry. Yeah, you don't have to deal with all that at all.
I don't want that guy coming near me. What kind of weird, shifty people he hires. All right, so let's
finish Hunger Games talk.
Finish our Hunger Games talk.
Now, one of the things I did... I mean, I did like what they did with the second half. I'm still... I understand that... You know, you needed a little bit more room for the movie to breathe as far as like breaking the second book up into two parts. I will say, I think they did pretty good job with the pacing. I thought like even breaking it up, it didn't really slow down too much until you had the dopey love triangle scenes.
Sure.
But I thought the action, it moved. I felt like I wanted to see what was going on with these other characters. I liked her unit at the end.
Right.
When she was, you know, she was in the propaganda unit for basically the fall of the Capitol.
Yeah.
And I liked those characters. And some of those characters we had seen before. They had, and some of them were new. So it was interesting to see the mix and how she interacted with them. And also how they trusted her. They knew she was lying to them. And then yet it didn't matter. But, and I believed it. But like that could have been one of those scenes or plot points that were like, this is bullshit. They never would have listened to her. But I really felt like...
Would they listen to...
Because when she said she had a secret mission to kill President Snow, she was making that up.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And they said, yeah, we all knew you were making it up. But, you know, basically it was validation. We believe in you and we think this is what you should be doing. So we're going to pretty much give our lives to help you achieve this.
And kind of knew that the other woman that was the commander of that unit, they kind of they didn't quite dig her. Like, that's the vibe, you know what I mean? Like, they weren't, and she, like, and that was when the one guy, the Ali dude, Marsala Ali Boggs, his character Boggs, was like, watch out, Julianne Moore's gunning for you. Can't trust anybody on this thing. It was cool to see then who was sort of trustworthy.
Yes.
And who wasn't. And then, you know, the other thing too, man, grisly deaths.
Yes.
You know, when they're going through the Capitol and it had been, you know, basically booby-trapped, really grisly deaths and really edge of your seat. Not just the mutts, but like when they had the walls.
The traps.
The traps, but then that wall, and then that like...
The black tar that came
ink
down.
Or what, whatever, that was insane. And that guy got caught up in those weird wires.
Yeah.
And I love how they're just going, oh, these game makers. And it's just like, yeah, these sadistic... rich game makers, like what a interest, how interesting can we kill these people?
Right.
And also the battle weary rebels, you know, who are like, you know, the depiction of the rebel as the sort of holy army, if you will, like they're doing this for this giant cause versus they've been, you know, bullwhipped into submission to do it or whatever was interesting and how they did it. And everyone in this army, I guess, is really young and good looking and in great shape.
It's, you know, it's literally a model army.
I don't know. What else? Anything else?
No, I think it's a good franchise. I like the way it wrapped up. There was no what's going to happen next. You know, it's not like Katniss will return with the Avengers. No. Like, no, you're not seeing any of that. We're done. It's time
to
move on.
She's the new James Bond.
Yeah. So it was good. I really felt like beginning, middle, and end. Now, it's great. So I thought it was good. I thought it was a good popcorn movie. I thought this is an interesting example where the franchise actually got better as the movies went on. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I thought every movie was better than the first one. So, you know, I was happy with it. I thought it was a nice job on a popcorn franchise, and I thought it ended well.
All right. Thank you, Katniss. So that is Comedy Film Nerds, Hunger Games, Mockingjay, Part 2, spoiler ep, number 39. Go to casper.com/comedyfilmnerds. Use coupon code comedyfilmnerds. We will be in Australia doing episode 300, which will be the Star Wars Force Awakens spoiler.
It is coming up.
So we will be recording that show at 3 a.m. on December 17th at Seamus O'Toole's Irish Pub, just outside of Melbourne. And we will post that episode probably around 5-6 a.m. Australia time, which will be, I don't know what that means, 11 in the afternoon on...
Or 11 a.m.?
11 a.m.
Or 11 at night?
11 at night on Wednesday.
Sometime Wednesday.
Wednesday, late afternoon or evening, West Coast American time is when our Star Wars spoiler ep will drop. So come say hey if you're in Melbourne. And then, of course, December 20th, we're doing the Star Wars holiday special commentary at the Hollywood Improv in the Lab. That's an 8:30 show, Sunday, December 20th. Go to improv.com or it's also on grahamelwood.com.
That one is not sold out. There's still tickets left for that.
Just started selling. It's cheap. It's like $8 for the tickets or something like that.
And it's a good thing, too, because we want to talk Star Wars with you guys if you're local.
Yeah.
Here, if you can't make it to Australia. And even if you could, you wouldn't be able to get in.
Yeah, sold out. So we're going to show the Star Wars holiday special, and we'll talk about Force Awakens there. It's $8. There's no drink minimum in the Lab.
Oh, good.
So it's a cheap, fun night out. It's the Sunday before Christmas. So if you're in LA, come out. It'd be great to see you. All right, guys, that's our episode. My name is Graham Elwood.
And I'm Chris Mancini. And as always, remember,
Han shot first.